So my name is José Bové. Listen to health writers if you are concerned about the health of the body politic.
Good evening and welcome to Health Writers on the Air. I'm your host this evening, Steve Blank. And I'm here with my 12-year-old son, Lou. Hi, Lou.
Hey, Dad.
Tonight, our very special guest is my 12-year-old son, Lou. And Lou read a book called Guantanamo Boy, written by British author Anna Pereira. And Lou spoke with Anna about it yesterday. Now, we had to pre-record the interview because it's 1 o'clock in the morning right now in the UK. Now, Lou, tell us about the book Guantanamo Boy.
All right, well, Guantanamo Boy is a novel about Khalid, who's just an average 15-year-old British boy of Pakistani descent, and he goes on a family trip to Karachi in Pakistan. But this is no jovial jaunt. Khalid gets kidnapped by U.S. forces because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But, in truth, he's completely innocent. He's then whisked over to a prison in Kandahar in Afghanistan, and eventually to the infamous Guantanamo Bay. He suffers physical and mental abuse while imprisoned, and he'll just never be the same.
Wow, Lou, thanks. That sounds like quite a book for a 12-year-old. Now, Guantanamo Boy was written for young people, but I loved it too. It's a thoughtful examination of injustice and cruelty, love and resilience, and coming of age in the post-9/11 era. I recommend that parents read Guantanamo Boy with their teenagers. Now, Lou, were you nervous about interviewing Anna Pereira? I mean, she's an accomplished author.
Well, I guess maybe a little at first, but not really. I was a bit more afraid that she'd think Lou was a British toilet.
Ah, okay, Lou. Now, let's hear that interview.
Hello, Steve. Oh. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for your patience. We had a hard time getting through, but now everything seems to be working just fine. Let me introduce you to my son, Lou.
Hi.
Hello, Lou. How are you?
I'm awesome. How are you?
I'm pleased to meet you. Very pleased for the program to have me. It's a pleasure.
I'm pleased to meet you, too. Thanks. I loved your book. Can I start by asking why you wrote it?
Okay, that's a good question. I went to a gig at the Globe Theatre in London, which was a charity event for a charity called Reprieve, and they fight for the rights of people on death row and also those in Guantanamo. This was 2006 in the autumn, and the director, Clive Stafford Smith, stood up and said that children, juveniles, young people were also held in Guantanamo. And being a children's writer, I was so shocked and appalled and disgusted by that, that I decided to write the book.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. It's completely unfair.
It is. Reprieve are trying to deliver justice, and they go in there and talk to the detainees and see if they can help them. Because, as you know, you've read the book, Lou, nobody in Guantanamo has ever been charged with a crime before being taken there.
Yeah, I know. Most of them are innocent.
That's right. They've been named terrorists without having any access to the courts or being able to defend themselves or even being able to ask what crimes they're being accused of.
It's just completely unfair.
I agree with you. You know, Lou, some people think that torture can be justified and that it is a way of extracting information that delivers some kind of justice. I agree with you and most people who believe that torture can never be justified and that it's always wrong. And mm-hmm. the CIA themselves have said that the information that they gained from using torture was not information that was useful.
Yeah, they're just scared and they'll do anything for it to stop, and I don't blame them. It's really terrible stuff.
It is. Which bit in the book do you, when you closed it, that stayed in your mind the most?
I was just thinking that, boy, after all of that, he's so happy to get home, but he'll never be the same. It's No, it's just a mind-numbing crime. They got kidnapped for doing nothing at all. Just false accusations. And I feel really sorry for him, but I'm glad that he's back at home.
It seems to me that you really did identify with the things that happened to him, and that you understood what he was going through at several levels, not just the human level, but also the fact that he'd been denied any chance to defend himself, and that his family became more important than they were in the beginning of the book.
Yeah, exactly. He really thought his family was lame at the beginning of the book, but near the end, he realized how important family was, and I think that's a great thing.
Yes, and he really was quite at that age, as you probably know. You probably haven't experienced it yet, or had some inclination towards it. Your parents become the most boring people on earth. I don't know why, because actually they know the most.
Yes, they do.
Some people go through stages where they try and separate themselves from their parents and often come back in stages to realizing that they have a lot to learn from these people who've brought them up. And that was one of the things that I wanted to stress, because he had plenty of time to think, didn't he?
Yeah, yes, he had so much time to think that it drove him out of his mind, and in part of his thinking, he always remembered all of the terrible things he did. He really disrespected his dad and thought everything he did was boring. Like, for example, his dad always wanted to go to these Oriental rug stores.
Yeah.
And he was really excited about, and then shining his shoes and all, but, and when Khalid was in the cell in Kandahar, Afghanistan, he saw the carpet and he was amazed by it, and that was all he could think about it, and he found beauty in everything, so like his dad said.
And he remembered his dad talking about it, and at the time he'd been bored, but now suddenly he understood what his father was saying. And that separation had given him a lot of understanding. And even though he was suffering and was didn't know what was going to happen to him next, he was able to link to that love that his father felt for him, and in wanting to share his experience of the pleasure of looking at those beautiful rugs.
He really did realize the importance of family, and family's made a lot of good choices, and some of his mates didn't make the best choices.
That's right, and that's what human beings do. We all do it, don't we? We go through hard times, and we go through difficult times, and we go through times where we're trying to learn and make sense of this crazy world that we're living in that quite often appears insane. As we go through that, we realize that people who surround us are very, very important, because we get a lot of our value system from them.
Yes.
And we learn about justice and fairness and kindness and goodness from those people more than anyone else.
If I were in that position, all of that physical and mental abuse would drive me mad.
All of us would be driven mad.
Yeah.
But, you know, young people, especially teenagers, they're very resilient and very strong, and they have a lot of hope in their hearts that things will turn out well. And he's helped a little bit by some of the gods, their natural kindness, and by the people around him, and that sees him through. Did you agree that that would help him?
Yeah, if every single guard was always kicking him around, that would be much worse. But not all the guards, even though that's their job, they aren't really that inhumane. They're real people, and he realizes that.
And everyone should be given that chance of redemption.
Mm-hmm.
It's a book, as you say, that's harrowing, but it also has a lot of healing and forgiveness, and if it has a message, it's one of peace. And it's funny, too. Have some funny parts.
Yes.
Do you remember any funny parts?
There were, early on, I liked the part where when he got home, he threw his blazer at the hook on the wall. At that time, he seemed kind of pessimistic and just feeling average, like no one's special. But in the end, he felt heroic. The sadness can, though, overwhelm the humor. But it's kind of tough to focus on all the funny stuff because it's just so sad with all that he's put through. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It has a sadness to it, doesn't it? Even when you're laughing, you know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what do you think should happen to Guantanamo? Because it's a prison that's still open.
Oh.
And on January the 11th in 2012, it will be 10 years since Guantanamo was created and the first planes came in from Afghanistan on that date 10 years ago. What do you think should happen?
I think it's an absolutely terrible place, so I think that they should shut it down. But it really does seem that we have no say in what the military does, at least us U.S. citizens, really. And I really think it's completely unfair, and I think it should be closed down as soon as they can. And we need to really fight for this because the way it's going now... not going very well.
Well, you said that beautifully, and you said what most people believe. And let's hope that some action will be taken by Obama and his government, and that Congress will go along with it to prevent this ever happening again, as well as closing the prison down before the 10th anniversary comes in January.
They must really be crazed on this terrorism thing, and very, very few of the people that they captured are actually, like, bad doers.
That's an interesting point, because there have been over 700 prisoners. There are now 172 or 4, I think, remaining there.
Yeah.
And there is a man called Andy Worthington who did research into every single one of the prisoners and researched the evidence against them. And he came to the conclusion, I think, that more than 95% of those inmates could be judged quite easily as innocent.
I was also wondering, where did you find all of the information out? Like, how did you get the research?
So there was masses of stuff. It was very easy to come up with a way of getting a 15-year-old British boy over to Guantanamo because one of the methods used by the military in Afghanistan and all those areas was that they leafleted people. They dropped leaflets from planes which offered $5,000 reward for anyone who was acting suspicious.
Yeah.
Suspiciously at that time, after 9/11, and the book is set 6 months after 9/11.
Yeah, but what would they consider suspicious?
Yeah, well, what is suspicious exactly?
Yeah.
There was a great deal of fear and paranoia at that time. Mm-hmm. And they dropped these leaflets offering money, which was the equivalent of 18 months, 2 years' wages. To most of these people who were goat herders in the hills of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And it was therefore like winning the lottery.
Yeah, I know.
Say, well, so-and-so hasn't been behaving very well, and I'm not sure what he was doing out last night in the hills, and who knows who his friends are. And these people were picked up as a result of very dubious information.
I'd really like to know, how effective is torture?
As it says in the book, when you twist somebody's arm up their back and you ask them to say anything, you will say anything.
Yeah.
Because when you're in pain, you want it to stop.
Yeah.
And if you're going to say yes to everything or say anything you possibly can in order to make it stop, then that's an intelligent and normal reaction.
If you try to tell the truth, they just absolutely won't believe it.
Exactly. In fact, the most sensible thing to do is to say yes to everything.
Yeah.
As quickly as possible. And many people obviously did that. And when the stories were checked, they were unusable because names were made up, dates were made up, all kinds of things were said.
They say they're going to take him home. It's all full of lies and, like, just, I wonder... how they could bear to do this, how they could do this without saying, oh, boy, this is a terrible thing to do, the guards.
That's a big question, isn't it? How can somebody harm another human being? And who has that right? I don't think anyone has that right. And I also don't think anyone has the right to go around the universe executing people who have committed crimes against humanity, because every soul and every human being has a right to redemption.
Yeah.
And that's why, to me, also the death penalty is wrong.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Troy Davis thing. We the people, a lot of we the people fought against it because they thought it was completely unfair. And
thou shalt not kill. It's clear that you don't have that right.
Yeah, everyone deserves a fair trial. And on page 50 in the book, a guard shakes his head and says, "Everybody from a Muslim country is seen as a threat to the USA right now. They're just Muslims. It's their religion. And the U.S. is, like, Christian, mostly. And so, really, are they that much different? Just if you're a Muslim person, does that mean you're a terrorist? Like, we seem
exactly.
to...
Exactly.
Yeah.
All Muslims were being regarded in the same way after 9/11. Well, which is wrong. A group of people committed a heinous crime by attacking the Twin Towers on that day, on 9/11. That does not mean the whole Muslim population is guilty of believing this, that was a warranted crime. It was a heinous crime, but it was a crime and not an act of war, I believe.
Yeah.
Because Islam actually means peace.
Yeah, and
most Christians want peace, most Muslims want peace too.
Yeah, exactly. Just because of that one act doesn't mean we have to, like, start a war. I mean, is there really that much of a difference between, like, sending a drone in, just calling it, like, a military operation, something good for the United States, like, making a hand...
Well, good for mankind.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that help mankind?
Is that really the right thing to do?
It can never be the right thing to do,
no.
Can it?
No, anything violent is... It has straight
it goes against human nature. War is never the answer. War creates war. Peace creates peace. And the only way that we can proceed as human beings is to behave with kindness to people who are different and have different belief systems, and to follow the path of forgiveness, because
mm-hmm.
that will lead to peace.
Exactly.
And war has never created peace.
Now, in your opinion, what is the difference between a terrorist act and a military strike?
Well, that's a big question. That is a very big question, and one that can only be answered by saying that every thing that we do in life that hurts and that hinders and that harms is an act of terrorism.
Exactly. My thoughts exactly. Yeah. It's really all about respect, and we really need to make peace with other countries and respect their cultures and
their belief systems.
And their belief systems.
And not allow ourselves to be damaged by thinking of anyone as other, as different.
I think it's very, very important for my classmates to know what's really going on in the world, because many different sources of media really don't cover this and make it sound, oh, yeah, the United States is so awesome and it's the best country and it's okay if we kill all these people and put them in prisons and all. But it's really not, and you could see that it's so unfair. These people have lives too. I mean, we need to mutual respect.
That's very beautifully put, Lou.
Thank you.
But it's not just America who are doing these things.
Yeah.
These acts of inhumanity are taking place all around the world.
Yeah, everywhere.
For various reasons. And through reading books that challenge our perceptions and our belief systems and the stuff that we're being fed on a daily basis is an important way of moving forward. You're the people who will be in charge. It is your age group that are will be dealing with these issues one day. And the responsibility lies with all of us, and especially young people. And it will one day be your turn to raise these banners of peace.
Thank you very much. That's a really great thing to say. And there should always be a trial. Well, they do this interrogation, and they always they talk with the people there. The prisoners, but they don't listen to them if they don't say what they want. They just say, oh, you're just lying, and then they do it again and again until they get them to sign the papers that they want them.
Exactly. You said it, and you understood it, and you got that book. I'm delighted that you were able to see through some of the media propaganda that has been used to propagate more terror. As people who want peace, how do we manage to convince our neighbors, our enemies, whoever is around us, that the world will be a better place without war and without these acts of massacres in our name?
Like, so many people are dying because of war, and that's just not the right way to be, because we'll just destroy everything. And if we're peaceful,
we'll destroy the planet and
if we're peaceful, we'll respect all different cultures, and we would never have to worry. We'd always be happy, and we won't have to have as much security. There will always be some people who get upset, but it'll be so much better with peace, world peace.
I agree with you. It's something worth looking at, and something worth pursuing.
Thank you so much. It's an amazing book, and I loved your interview. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Lou, for wanting to talk to me. I'm flattered beyond belief. Thank you very much.
Wow, Lou, that was really an awesome interview. How does it feel being on the radio?
Well, it's just so thrilling. And I'm very excited that all my friends from school are tuning in.
And the really cool thing is that this is their radio station, too. Every voice you hear is a member of the community. And if you listen to Health Writers, and you're concerned about the health of the body politic, visit our website at healthwriters.wordpress.com. Good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night.